I would like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. It is February 19th, 2026, at 6:01 PM. So do we have Brian on the line or should we skip over to the Corolla guys?
I think we can get him on.
Okay, let's skip over to the, just because we have a lot on the schedule tonight. We'll skip over to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes or comments to the January 15th meeting minutes?
Or is it not?
Nope.
Or any comments on the check register?
I trouble.
All the Summit County charges that went in for the Matterhorn project, there was like 76K, 4K, 8K. Is that the end? Those are the last more?
We probably have just a little under $6,000 they have to build us for, but it's very near the end. And it's at about $850,000, $860,000
right now. Okay. And then can you remind me on SWIFT comply? The backflow system, but what is that exactly, the cloud service aspect of that?
Yeah, so it's, we used to hold all the records in Cassell, our accounting and billing software, and it was cumbersome, so we've gone to SWIFT comply. It does all of our messaging, takes care of all that stuff.
Can you log in?
Yes, this is the full, second full year we're in.
Okay, so we're happy with that.
Yep.
It's working well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. Okay, basic question. So we had a couple of our annual rentals come in on vehicles. So there's the one with Century and one with Wheeler. Is there a reason, we talked about this before, is there a reason we don't use just one company for doing those long-term rentals?
Maybe more it's just the brand.
You have a specific one that they offer. And...
yeah.
Correct.
Sometimes you're limited on what you want, like a loader, it's like, you know, a separate brand.
And we already have them on property, we're just renewing the lease mm-hmm. over again. So, okay. Okay, and then last one, Siemens Industrial Inc. There was that clamp. What's the description? 7.7K.
Oh, it's a clamp-on meter. It's a ultrasonic meter to replace trail signs.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so it's a nice clamp-on.
Trail side.
Yeah, so it's a divide meter between the two basins, which we have to report to the state. Yeah, every year. And that meter was original. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 22, 24 years old.
Not as old as the Amsburg.
No, not as old as the Amsburg.
Okay. Cool. That was it for me.
I had one question. I just wondered what our interest rate is. I saw that we made our third payment to Summit County for this property.
Oh.
3 something.
Yeah, okay. It's like 3%. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did the amortization schedule kind of in a way that's to our favor. So we're paying a little less than I thought we would.
Okay. Great. Do we want to go over the purchase order?
Well, let's see if Brian's online.
Brian is on.
Oh, okay.
Maybe if we can go back to that and then just finish the consent agenda, that might be good. I didn't.
Ryan, you there?
I think the purchase orders sound like fun, though.
Well, how long a night do you have? We got people in the room to talk about those, unfortunately.
Hey, you guys are always pretty efficient, is my recollection from your Administrative Control Board meetings. So I'm not concerned that I could get stuck behind something. But if you'd like to talk about the refinancing now, I'd love to do it.
I'd love to talk about the refinancing.
Okay, Steve, should I just talk about it or how?
Yeah, go ahead and lead out. There was a memo in the packet that basically we're looking to refund or basically refinance the $18 million loan we got to build this building and shop. We're going to effectively drop the interest rate by about 1.5%, which will save us $2.8 million net present value. So it seems to be a good time. Kind of get that reset before we close the WIFIA loan. So,
and we have one shot at this, kind of picking when we want to do it.
Yeah, we have one shot at this because it would be probably a 20-year bond, and so our next shot would be to refinance it in 10 years.
Yeah,
if we wanted. Right. But the kind of lock in the savings right now is.
Yep, and I just add when we did the $18 million with Bank of Utah, there was a specific reason that that pathway kind of made sense, because you could have gone to the market at that time. The rate that you got from Bank of Utah was not it was a good rate for a bank to purchase the bonds from you, but like if you'd gone and gotten your rating and gone to the market in 23, you would have gotten a lower rating than Bank of Utah gave you. But relative to what we've seen in interest rates the last 5 or 7 years, it was a high rate. I mean, there was kind of a general feeling. I mean, if you ask Chris Robinson, and he would know, we were at a high point, and kind of like you'd had a couple of years where you could borrow for almost nothing, where literally we had sewer districts that, you know, financed $50 million at like 1.7% for 25 years. Like, just, I don't know if we'll ever see that again. But that had gone. And we had kind of hit a spike in interest rates that had a lot of people kind of hand-wringing about, do I really want to lock in 20 years of rates at these rates? And Bank of Utah has been, they've been a good partner for a lot of Utah municipalities, because they make the purchases when they buy your bonds, they make them callable at any time. So whenever you feel like it makes sense to refinance them, you can go ahead and do it. And so this is... the scenario has played out kind of exactly like we hoped it would. You know, rates haven't cratered back down to, you know, 2.5%, but they've come down, as Steve mentioned, quite a bit from where they were, to the point that there's quite a bit of savings on the table. And the way I think about it is, if you could have gotten, you know, a 3.6 or something like that percent, and the debt service that we're kind of looking at now that we think might be where around this refinancing comes out, if you could have gotten that in 2023, the board might have been like, yeah, that makes sense. That's a good deal. But instead we took, you know, that wasn't available because rates were much higher. And so I'm happy to answer any questions about it, or about kind of the market and interest rates and, you know, where things are now, and or what the process is, if anyone has any questions.
So yeah, it's my, so 3.6 is the new rate.
So we aggregate, you know, you have bonds that mature in 34 and 35 all the way through 44. Each one of those will have a coupon on it and a yield, an effective yield on it. And when you aggregate those together, that boils down to what we call the true interest cost. And that's kind of usually what the metric that we look at when we're telling somebody how much, you know, what was our rate? If you're asking for one number on the rate, the last set of numbers that we ran was at a three. Just get to where it is. It was around a 3.72. And that was 1 week ago, and interest rates have dropped 7 basis points on there's an index for tax exempt bonds called the MMD, or Municipal Market Data, and they publish an index every day of that we use to help price and gauge where municipal bonds would price. And so that's dropped about 7 basis points. So we think you'd be in the 3.65-ish range right now.
Is that for all of our debt, or just this refinance?
That would be just for this refinancing, you know, and when it all comes done, you'd probably, we estimate it'll be around $17 million. And then you would get an interest rate on your WIFIA loan. And then you have another small, not a large amount of let's see, I'm trying to think what the other, you have a small taxable, refinancing that was done, I think, in 2019, that was at taxable rates, but those are the reason we did a taxable refinancing at that time is because you could not do a tax exempt refinancing, but you could still save money by refinancing your tax exempt bonds with taxable bonds because of how significantly lower rates were at that time. But we generally keep an eye on what those opportunities look like. Those bonds, the 2019 bonds, are not callable for another couple of years, so you couldn't refinance those right now anyway. But generally speaking, your district does a really good job of kind of dotting your I's and crossing your T's. You're in a very strong, solid financial position. There's been a lot of thought put into the WIFIA loan process and this project that you're working on and kind of how that all comes together. And that, you know, you already got a WIFIA loan bond rating because you needed one for the WIFIA process. And so we will basically be asking Fitch, who did that one, and then S&P, who rates your other bonds, also for ratings on this refinancing. But we already know, based on just recent history, that you're in a very strong position. The true interest cost on that Bank of Utah transaction was a 5.17. So it really is a, you know, percent and a half drop in the rate, which is significant and fortuitous.
And just to lay out the timeline a little bit, with your recommendation tonight, we would go to Summit County Council sometime during March.
March 25th,
and then go to market after that. So, you know, we're at 3.65 today. Likely it might go down a little bit, but you never quite know. But we're in a good range. We're up or down a little bit. We still have some pretty good savings we can lock in.
Fantastic. So do we need to vote on this?
Recommendation. Any concerns?
I do not.
I don't have any. I agree with the recommendation. So, recommendation for approval by Summit County Council, all necessary action to issue certain water revenue bonds for the refunding of 18 million Bank of Utah bonds.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Bill? Raise his hand.
Okay.
What's better? So.
All right. It's unanimous. So we're ready to move forward.
Yeah. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
Enjoy awesome. Thank you, Brian. Thanks, everybody. Have fun with the purchase orders. Take care. We'll see you.
All right. So I think we should move on to the engineers that are all here tonight to tell us all about our 60% plan.
Republican. These guys are general. We're not on the agenda, we just came.
I don't know if we called public input.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Do we have any public input?
Appreciate you taking the time. My name is Justin Keith. I represent the group that owns Seattle Falls, Seattle Junction Commons, the development process. We're in the process of getting approvals through the planning commission. We're very much on the cusp of that approval. I know that previously we submitted for potential annexation out of the regional, and that was denied. And so we met then with kind of your internal team to talk about the reasons for that. And I just wanted to report back that we're sensitive to that, right? And to the issues we've been engaged Bill Laughlin to help us look at what the wet water opportunities are that would be associated with the annexation. We've also addressed the other concern, which was, what does Summit Water think, right? So we've met with them repeatedly. They've given us a LoSRB letter for entitlement purposes, but they've also, in that LoSRB letter, expressly stated that they would not object or oppose us annexing it to Mountain Regional as part of the broader annexation. We've also taken the feedback and gone back and talked to the surrounding property owners who have significant development potential that's going to need major infrastructure. It's not just water, but also sewer and others. And we think there's some synergies associated with that. Our piece is pretty critical in its location. And that was already on their mind, not so much for water, but for sewer. And so we're having those talks ongoing as well. And so I just want feedback from the board, but also for you to be aware of when you hear that we have a LoSRB letter from Summit Water moving forward. It wasn't a hostile move. We want to continue to cooperate and be a good participant in the growth of that niche of the county. And we're looking for your feedback as to how we can do that at any point in time. And what's there.
So we've heard you loud and clear. Don't want to upset our neighboring water company. And also, there's got to be water sources, right? Which is what Bill is studying right now. So we don't really have a formal presentation of any kind, but just wanted to keep you in the loop as we're kind of going down that path. We're actually set to be heard by the Planning Commission next week. That's my public input. But happy to answer any questions you may have. I've been involved in the property since Singerman first acquired it back 2017 now. And the very first thing they called me, and I had helped them with some other acquisitions here. They're like, who do we need to meet? I said, you need to meet Pat Putt. A lot of what we've done, this will be the first in a new reason that actually goes all the way through. And a lot of what we've done is kind of with their nurture and help to say, you know, there's potential for this aspects of the site that have gotten kind of tired, right? Right? Owner that can really, really invest. And I think we have that ownership group that they've showed longevity and a willingness to step on the existing asset. So happy to be, we want to be in a community. That's always been the goal. And so that's, we'll try to just be forthcoming with you. Thank you.
Do you guys have any questions?
As a non-agenda item, I don't right now.
Okay. Okay. Great. Well, thanks for coming in, guys.
Appreciate it. We'll continue. I think I want to be a little bit organized with surrounding property owners as to how that goes down. But if it came back as an agenda, we would go through staff, obviously, and it would be a concerted effort.
Okay.
And won't waste your time. Or something that makes sense. Right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Terrific.
Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
I'm going to keep introducing you guys until, you know,
until you're all gone.
I was happy you called me.
So I think now we're ready for Rolo to present.
Thanks for having us back.
Yeah.
Big milestone. Want to come back and give a project design update. We delivered. Okay, so let's go to the next slide. And there's some information before I'll just say that big picture, we finished the 60% design. I actually had a workshop with staff yesterday. So a good time to come back. Agenda, what we want to kind of touch on with an introduction, just kind of give an overview of what's happened since the last time we met, which was last January. Give a little bit of an update, an overview of the 60% design, lay out what's, you know, certain items that have progressed throughout the design. Talk about the 60% cost estimate and then next steps from kind of the design team. So again, just kind of wanted to refresh the memory. This is a figure we kind of showed last time we met at the end of the board meeting, showing the preferred alternative as we went through that kind of alternatives analysis. And just as a quick refresher, you know, converting to a pump flash mixed vehicle coagulators up on the front end of the plant, some solids handling improvements in the middle of the plant, as well as kind of towards the end with belt press and things like that, replacing the membrane skids, and then kind of an exterior footprint, new solids holding tank, GAC extension to deal with organics, and then the new chemical building for safety and operations. And so that, I think, generally that we're still very consistent with that. We have kind of designed or progressed things somewhat since that point, but just kind of there a little refresher. So on a timeline, again, looking at the top, we kind of did this timeline in kind of quarters throughout 2025 and now into the first quarter of 2026 here. We met in last January. That process kind of ended alternatives analysis earlier, conceptual design. We then went into basis of design report. So we did another report that was in parallel with our 30% design. We delivered that 30% last summer, so July of 2025. In parallel, we did this membrane procurement interview. So that's a couple months ago to approve an agreement with the membrane supplier. We began that process, you know, really Q2 of last year in the summer. We advertised out to a number of membrane suppliers, got bids and proposals back from them in August, made a selection with a staff selection committee, chose H2O Innovation as the membrane supplier, and then there was some negotiation back and forth before that agreement was executed in November. That was important, especially with these membrane skids. They're, each supplier is quite different, and so you want to know during design really what we're designing around their pipe configuration, things like that. It's really important, so that's why we did that process. And then down there on the bottom, the 60% design really started last summer as well. Part of that long timeline was awaiting for H2O to get on board so we can incorporate some of their. We had, as part of that agreement, they are providing some design services, design submittals, so we know, what we're designing around. And so that, otherwise, 60% might have probably would have been a shorter window, but that kind of extended it. A big part of the 60% was we had a surveyor and a geotechnical firm come and survey the site, and the geotech firm also did a geotechnical investigation. We'll talk a bit about that later, but that was really great information and helped our design. And then ultimately, as I mentioned, we delivered the 60% design drawings and specifications beginning of this month, and then had that workshop just yesterday with staff to go over their comments, feedback, questions. Let's get into this overview of the 60% design. This is now an updated layout. There's some things here. Most of this is the same. You can see on the place for the site, we still have the solids holding tank, new GAC building, new chemical building. On our proposal alternative, we had another garage kind of where that solids holding tank is, but we found a way that I'll show this in a minute. We found a way to eliminate that from the project, which really helped. And then a couple things on just the layout in this kind of upper right-hand corner. We're relocating the promontory irrigation pump station to an exterior footprint. That really frees up some things inside the building. It's getting very chaotic inside the plant. So there's some extra work to do that. And then I'm not showing this layout, although there's a couple of manholes. That's why I kind of point to that there. Where the 60% design includes the sewer line, a new sewer main down to connect kind of to the south to Snyderville Basin's collection system, an existing manhole we're going to tie into and be able to send, so we'll demolish and remove the septic system that's there. So all the kitchen and sinks and everything will go to the sewer. And then as well, from a process perspective, sending any water that comes off of the belt press to the sewer really helps because that is not something you want to recycle back to the front of the plant. So those are some key elements from the layout.
And remind me, we finished all those negotiations with the sewer district. They're good with everything.
They are willing to accept. Yeah. There's an impact.
And there is some. We've definitely we've been coordinating closely with them. There's still some, back and forth a bit on that, especially if the impact. Right. They're on board with the plan. They're the ones. I think originally. The original plant design had a sewer line maybe going to the north to, but that would go to a lift station and have to be pumped. And so they didn't, Snyderville Basin, that really had a capacity limitation, that wasn't going to be an option. But once we got talking to them, it's okay, we can run the sewer line south and run and flow by gravity. And that's
okay. I misunderstood. Okay. So that was the possible. No, they just didn't like that technical aspect of going north.
Right. Cool. Right.
Thanks for solving that.
Yeah, and then we also, one thing I didn't like is a big, there's just a lot of flow. So we've really reduced the amount of flow, the percentage of this course. It's really going to be new things other than, well, it's everything. But it's like sitting the press eight, the water coming off the bell press, because that is falling. And in the chemical building, we'll need some softened water for the cleaning the membranes. It's going to precipitate out a lot of, deposits inside the piping. So the we have a softener system that regenerates with a brine solution, and so that like brine waste off of those regenerations, we'll send that to the sewer as well. But we also like limited that. But so they're still worried about kind of capacity and flow, really trying to minimize it. But we worked with them into a realm of care. Oh yeah, thanks. So this next slide, one, really big thing, especially for the promontory and the view of everything, this new chemical building. This is a view of it as it stands at the 60%. Looking at a few things, we kind of started this design from, a layout perspective, what's needed, where the tanks kind of started, filling things out. From an architectural perspective, our intent here was to generally match the existing building, so pitched roof, kind of match the existing wood panels on the outside. This actually, because it's a chemical building, we actually are going to have like a concrete masonry block wall. It's actually going to be an actual wall, and that helps with some hazardous rating and fire rating, other things you need to do for a chemical building like this, but then attach those wood panels to the outside so that look matches kind of a stone at the bottom. You can kind of see the first kind of few feet of the building. Talking with promontory as a noun, this is also kind of helping the brand from the operators up there. A little bit of a lower canopy there. You can see there's some other doors on that one, side of the building. So that kind of helps there. And then new chemical offloading station where chemical trucks back up to that. Hook up their hose and storage tanks. Next slide there.
When do we run that past promontory?
This is a big discussion item.
Okay.
So I think, we met with promontory a little over a month ago. Tried to have it happen earlier. We wanted to get it far enough in the design. Once I reached out, it was like early December, the holidays. It didn't happen until January. But we met with them, and this is just, the design set is new to be dealing with the promontory and the ridge line and things like that. It's not a normal location where we're designing these facilities. So because we kind of started, as I said, from kind of the ground up on what was needed in that chemical building, it's hard to tell there, but that ridge of the roof is 32 feet above finished grade as it is in the 60% design. Meeting with promontory, the building can't be that high. So we kind of started learning that about a month ago, and we're already working on some things in the in parallel, so we need to address that fully at 90%. There's some options on the table. We're kind of even, for example, considering horizontal tanks, chemical storage tanks that help reduce the height, a few other things to kind of get that height down to an acceptable level. So that's kind of why I showed these. These are snapshots from our architectural drawings, showing the kind of elevation view, a couple of different sides of that building.
Is it taller than the existing building?
It's the existing building is like 27, a little over 27, 28 feet.
But was 32 the code?
It's probably 28.
Yeah, I think in the ridge line it's
26.
Yeah,
it's 28. If it's the promontory development agreement and the design guidelines, it's 26 per the county code. One thing I think we're going to try to meet that more restrictive, like 26, to kind of like help. That's the goal. Right now, we're going to try to get that down to
26. It will be shorter than the existing.
And it will be shorter than the existing.
Wow. Correct.
Yeah. So. Inside that building, just kind of showing that this is the current layout again with the vertical thing. So it's kind of what we're looking at. It's kind of some different chemical containment areas. a couple of things to point out. We are currently at this building size, you know, on the lower left of this electrical room. It's larger than it needs to be right now for what we need for this project, but it gives some future flexibility if Chris wants to move the server over there or some other things that kind of gives some of that flexibility. Another thing that is really important is this kind of in this bottom center is this future chlorine dioxide room. In the recent past, Mount Regional hasn't had any big issues with manganese, but which is interesting because Quinn's treat the same water had issues with manganese when they started up and had to add a whole separate green sand filter process to remove the manganese. They have color events out in the distribution system. So the reason why, so it's a room that we're going to build now, but not have the equipment because it, hasn't had those manganese issues. We're not going to, put in the equipment now, but that could change. Quinn's had those issues, and so we want to be ready to inset this chemical building and we could later install the chlorine dioxide if it's needed. So that's the idea.
So is manganese toxic? Is it or
it's an aesthetic issue, really. It's for the most part. That's how the limits are set for that. It's more of an aesthetic issue because you get this. It becomes kind of colored water that's coming through your tap. There's concerns that way. That's the biggest. Yeah, at the levels we're talking about.
It's also on the list to potentially be regulated from a health standpoint.
Yeah.
And then we would have an actual limit. Secondary aesthetic limit. So if we, however, come to be, we don't have a tool in the plant design kind of about this space. Future proofs.
Is there talk that it would be a primary at some point? A secondary?
It's got the no better means. Canada swapped over. They have a primary standard now.
Yeah, I'm not plugged into the latest. It's out there as a potential, and I don't know what the levels would be. But when you have, if you were to have as a secondary standard, as Brad said, when manganese problem shows up, people's tap shows up as brown water, yellow water, and you get phone calls and complaints.
It's probably worse than if there was a primary standard. You just don't want to see it.
Right. But yeah, with a future primary standard, you certainly need to be able to address that. And this is we've demonstrated that in our planning that this is a good tool should you need it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Cool. Unless anyone has questions on the next slide. This is now kind of looking at, it's a little bit of a combination of the existing main building in the middle, the existing GAC in the lower left, kind of the upper left is the new GAC building that we're really going to have walkways between the existing GAC and the new GAC, and also another walkway in the main treatment building into that GAC area. So this will mostly be connected. The one thing that's not truly connected is that solids holding tank at the top. It's close to the existing building, but it's a separate facility. Really the layout in the building, I guess a couple things to point out. There are some changes that have happened even since the 30% design, but it's still pretty standard. We have the flocculation basin since the water comes in. Of course, do a flash mix through the pipe into the flocculation basins, and then it'll flow over and we'll go to those membrane feed pumps. We'll pump onto the new skids. So in the center, there's currently, or in the 60% at the time, we were just kind of showing those as boxes, we knew those dimensions were, but we've since the 60%, we've updated the model. You can actually see the actual skids with the membrane modules and everything. So that's kind of in the center. Using the existing kind of basins back towards the front of the plant for solids thickening and equalization. And then the belt press and conveyor, this is one thing that was a really good change that working with the belt press or the belt conveyor manufacturer. We are originally planning on putting in a belt conveyor to take the solids off the belt press, and then going up to the top of the page where that new garage was going to be, and put it into the dump truck there. Working with the belt conveyor manufacturer, we were able to make it work inside the existing facility to the existing truck bay in that existing GAC building. And that equipment cost was much lower for this layout, but then also just, you know, eliminated that cost of that new garage. And especially modifications to the existing building to take about 2 years out, which probably would have been the biggest kind of cost and issue of that previous concept. So an improved concept there. So this is where big kind of discussion here, 60% cost estimate. Apologize that it wasn't in the board packet beforehand. He got this cost estimate from our internal cost estimating team at Corollo on Tuesday. And larger increase than expected to the cost estimate. So it went from at 30% last August, $37 million was the estimate, went up to $44.5 million. Talking about, I just want to summarize as I, you know, the last couple of days diving into what has changed from the 30 to the 60. One thing right off the top is kind of a change in scope, moving that irrigation wet well outside, not quite, but you know, over $900,000 to make that happen. This site excavation, the next bullet point there, an additional over $2 million. Part of that is a little bit of having an accurate survey for the excavation quantities to make the chemical building, the new GAC building. We're going to do a significant amount of excavation. But even more importantly than those quantities, the bigger change was when we did the geotech report, there's a bunch of volcanic rock up there. And so to excavate for the new facilities is going to be much more different equipment, take more time, more labor, that type of thing. On the GAC building, it's slightly larger than it was previously at 30%, and that's to kind of made it larger with this one lower roof portion of the new GAC building that can handle snow drift. So we didn't want to put, if we would have put the new GAC building right up next to the existing, the way wind comes and it drops snow on the existing roof, and because we didn't design that, we would have had to have gone in and done our own structural calculations of the existing roof to per code to get the additional load. So to avoid that, there's some we'll deal with the snow drift with the new facility. And then this electrical and INC was the biggest chunk that was a lot higher than the 30%, more than $4 million additional. Part of this, I'll say at the 30%, because the electrical design hadn't really been fully fleshed out yet, we used just a 20% allowance to kind of try to capture that. And then at 60%, because we'd started that design development on electrical drawings, our cost estimating team did a detailed takeoff of all the different panels, new equipment, conduits, wire, that type of thing. And so that was a big difference, led to a big increase. One thing to verbally share when I saw that, one thing we've been spending the last couple of days is, wow, that seems really high. Doing a little bit of due diligence, meeting with Alan Rogers at SKM even today, we went through the detailed cost estimate and found, I think because in particular, the 60% design didn't include how we're running conduits, what type of conduits, that type of thing. So our cost estimate made some really conservative assumptions. But talking to Alan, he already has in mind what he's going to do, cable tray, things like that. So they had assumed almost everywhere, they'd assumed PVC-coated conduit. Really expensive from a material perspective, but also labor to work with that. So I can pretty comfortably say this $44.5 million just for that, that's really conservative, too conservative an assumption alone, is at least $1.5 million to $2 million high. We haven't had time to modify or do anything else to the cost this amount, but verbally just wanted to share that. I know that still is a big increase. Completely cover all of it. There's at least that aspect of it that's definitely a good point to that, so that's too conservative. The contingency, there's a, often with these estimates, we add a contingency at, we added a 30% contingency at 30% to account for, you know, not having all the design detail there. We reduced that to 20%. So even with the cost going up, you know, that reduced the contingency by over $1 million. And then there's some other miscellaneous, some equipment quotes that had gone up, a few other things that, that I just kind of lumped the rest of that together. But that all, yeah, the, that, that's the $7.5 million increase from 30% to 60%. So, yeah. Don't like to be the bearer of bad news. Definitely was bad news to share in our share on Tuesday and then also in the workshop yesterday.
What was our original budgetary number we kind of had in mind?
When?
Yeah.
These months at least show in January, you know, it was over $35 million last January is what we were thinking. Went up a little bit to 30%.
We pulled the trigger initially.
It was the 35 when we originally went for the bonding and did everything using that $35 million number. And that's just construction costs. We have design fees, impact fees. So we were about, roughly, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, we were at around $45 million. Our new number is over $51 million.
Without backing up a couple of things and where we think we have savings. So it's $5 to $7 million more than we originally thought. Our WIFIA loan, including contingencies, is $38 million and change. And then a $2 million from the state. So this is significantly higher.
And we've already talked to them today. This is $38 million to done deal right now. We can't ask for more at this point without doing another deal and getting more appropriations from them. So it's possible at some point, but not right now.
And then this number is gonna go up again, when we switch to horizontal tanks?
I think what'll happen on the chemical building, so the chemical, the, what is in that 44.5 is the chemical building as it stands today. The tanks themselves, if we go horizontal, will be more expensive. But the building height going lower, we're also, we, to get the building height lower, part of the, doing the pitched roof and to help with the footprint of the building, it's our current, our roof joists are expanding that entire, it's like the building 65 feet wide. Mm-hmm. They're expanding that entire way. So one thing we will do is add some column, intermediate columns, so that the roof span isn't as long, so maybe it'll only be 20 to 25 feet chunks, right? And then that'll reduce the roof joists, lower building. We're also looking at doing some footprint savings at the building, smaller, especially length-wise. Probably giving up some of that future flexibility for the electrical room. And then the chlorine dioxide is a help. It's a good room.
It's generous.
It's just generous. And part of the generosity is there's a couple ways to do chlorine dioxide. You have to generate it on site. It doesn't last very long, so you get a generator. This room was made so that you could generate and store a solution in a tank and then have metering pumps to feed from there. At the flows and like the concentrations of what we would need to add, the dose we would need to add to deal with any manganese issues, we can actually do a direct feed from that generator. And if that reduces the footprint, so I think we're going to we started with, hey, let's give the flexibility in the future, and now we might lock you into needing to do a direct feed. So that's very doable and a good option. And so, anyway, to your question about the chemical building, I think it gets, the cost goes down. The cost goes down on that chemical building. So
you get even with horizontal.
Shorter, even with horizontal.
Right. But there may be trade-offs there, right?
Yeah. Well, looking at a footprint that's 80%. It's 80% of this footprint. And that also helps the visual impact of the site. But with these.
Really, you can decrease its footprint with the horizontal tanks.
Yeah.
With horizontal
with
tanks.
Horizontal
and
tanks.
And the tighter chlorine dioxide.
Tighter chlorine dioxide. A little bit tighter on the electrical.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so that'll be a cost savings. I don't know if it'll be a significant cost savings, but it's not a cost add.
But we're past our logs. How big of a problem is this?
Well, It, I mean, so WIPIA is scheduled to close next Wednesday. In order for us to sign a contract, we need to know where the money's coming from, even though we might not need it for 18 months, 2 years. So we have had a call with WIPIA today. It's possible we can get another WIPIA loan. They have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of their data. Mm-hmm. We can go out to market. We can cut our capital expenditures for the next little bit. Steve calculated about an additional, this $7 million hypothetical would be an additional $500,000 in debt service payment due in 20.
It depends on how we structure it, because we probably go to market for that. So that would become due even before we started paying with it potentially. But kind of what it does is for the next several years, we were looking at only having to do about a 3% rate increase because all we have to do is keep up with inflation because our debt service isn't going. We probably have to roll in some fives and sixes in the next year or two. Once we get to that level, then we can kind of hold. Once we create another $500,000, let's say, in revenue. When it all, 2033, kind of the critical year when we start paying with WIPIA and things like that, my early projections had 8% maybe rate increase that year. It's more like double digit now, low double digit, but 10 or 11, 12 maybe. We can phase that in a little bit. We talked to WIPIA too about we were going to capitalize a lot of interest, but maybe we start our rate increases a little sooner and start paying some of that interest back sooner to cut the overall cost. But, I mean, one way or another, it's rate increases. It's just how we stagger them in. But I know there's a lot of, we want to avoid a double digit, but what that might mean is like this year we did about a 5, maybe next year's a 6, 5, 6, 5. Yeah, so we kind of keep up a higher rate than what we thought we were going to do on rate increases.
But if we wanted to make some of that interest payment early, we'd have to push the rate increase. That's in the 5, 6 number?
That's,
or that would be a little
that
bit
would
higher
be,
than?
It could be 6, 5, 6, because right now I was thinking we could hold 3. Because our costs should only go above, if inflation normalizes, which it seems to have done over the last couple of years, 3% usually will get us there on a rate increase, but that changes. So it becomes more of a consistent 5-6 probably, if we're running all the way out to 2033. So 7 years of 5 to 6% rate increases, you know, more than halves your bill again. So base is 75, you know, base we're talking in the hundreds, in the low hundreds, sorry, 110, 120 maybe in all of our rates would be by the time we get to 2033. That's 7 years away. And your best financial forecaster will say 5 years is pretty good. If you can get it at 5 years, you can count on 7. We're kind of stretching it. So it's kind of hard. We want to make a decision now on where we'll be in 7 years. So we're trying to see that path. It's a little hard, but it's not insurmountable. We can come up with the money. We can delay some other capital projects, like maybe some more line replacements that we were doing in Summit Park. Maybe those get tabled a little bit. Some vehicle purchases just get pushed. So unfortunately, that's kind of the impact, is the money's got to come from somewhere. And the only way is from our customers or from delaying other projects.
And this is just based on what we know, right? The things that we're planning on in that next 7-year window. The other thing it doesn't account for is if there's some catastrophic event that we're forced to make major capital improvement.
Is there anything we can do to recalculate impact fees?
We can. We can do that again. And we probably will, because now we can add this additional $7 million. Kind of like we did this year, we did that quick memo because we had the update of the cost. So we did that. I think that's a prudent thing because maybe we'll have a nice growth period pre-Olympic. We can have some big impact for years. That would obviously help.
And I don't want to jinx this, but this is estimates. And until a contractor comes and bids it, it could be $55 million. It could be $42
million. Because I know the contingency went down. So the current contingency is about $3 million. Is that where it's left to?
No, it was six.
It's higher.
It's higher than that.
Yeah.
Yesterday was 8.5 down to 7.
7. It's under 7. It's 7.4.
Yeah, this is a good. And the WIFI alone, to originally meet the left side of this graph, the 35 million, 42 million, we were only planning on drawing down about 34 or 35 million. WIFI has approved 38. So we can draw down more than that, but it doesn't get us to there. So that's where we would potentially have to go to market to get another 5, 6, 7, depending on how it all shakes out. So we hadn't completely, like, that's our number, and that's all we're going to borrow. We'd had some contingency with WIFIA, but we were hoping not to have to use it. Obviously, and a lot of the payments were based on that. Now we're kind of seeing, well, we'll probably use all of that and probably get a little bit more.
Yesterday, the contingency was $7,416,000.
Okay.
I guess I'm most concerned right now about potentially double-digit increases coming at us. That was a line in the sand last time we were talking about rate increases. Like multiple people were pretty uncomfortable going past 10.
Yeah, and
that's the reality. We need to do something to change this project.
And Sam had a good idea. I think maybe when this goes out to bid, we do parse it out a little bit just to see that if we want to do everything except maybe the GAC process for right now, and that keeps us under. And like I said, I haven't had a lot of time to work with this number yet. I think there's a way, but what it does is it takes away. We've had pretty good rate increases for our customers, not as high as some in the basin, but we've had pretty good rate increases. We were going to have a little bit of a reprieve for about 3-4 years. What it does is kind of take that away more than anything, I think.
And juices up the other end.
Yeah, if we do it early, then the 2033 probably doesn't have to be double digits. But I have to change our plan for the next 3 or 4 years leading up to 2033. I can
next month. Sharpen your pencil, see what you can do magic-wise.
Yeah, I'll see what I can, but there's a way to get there. It just kind of changes the plan. And so it's easier to just plug in, like, okay, if I change this year, but I'll go back through and work that and say, okay, if we do 6 or 7 for 4 years, so then 3 and 4s are building on a bigger number. You know, just... So I don't think we have to be to double digit, but we would be a lot higher in the next 4 to 5 years than what we thought, but still single digits. And it does, we're putting our capital budget focus on this, which is important. It's a big source. It'll help a lot, but
we're also building it. I mean, I've heard there's a couple of things in here that we don't need. Nice to haves, and potentially we might need them in the future, but like, is this the point where we need to sharpen our pencils on both sides of the equation?
But I think we just need to be cautious. There are some things built in, but are we going to hamstring ourselves down the road if we have to then find a space for them?
But if we're so tight on budget that we're thinking about double-digit rate increases for our customers, do we really have that luxury to build for, you know, kind of a rainy day?
Yeah, no, it's. I think we're going to have to weigh.
We've got to find that balance.
Yeah.
I agree.
I can definitely spend some more time on this. That was, you know, a quick kind of update turnaround for me to try to give some idea. But what I'll work on is more of a consistent below double digit and see what we can get by there.
And I think Brad and Alan, I think you need to sharpen your pencil on the things that Alan has identified. If the chemical building is reduced, things are taken, vertical tanks, whatever, so we know what we're actually dealing with. I know we're only at 60%. I assume some of these numbers are based on recent bids or reality in the market.
But I think electrical has $1 million to $2 million, you know, and then contingency. I know contingency doesn't become money you get back. It usually just becomes money that then gets allocated to something specific. Sam's taught me that. But still, at the same time, if there is some, well, it's $7 million, but we're only going to spend $5 million of that contingency, all of a sudden, maybe I'm back $4
million. Yeah.
And now we're talking where we maybe don't have to go to the market to get more loans.
Yeah.
But... So I think for
we
now,
also have to do standard practice. Like if our engineers are telling us they want a certain amount of contingency on the project, then I think we would.
No, and that's And I think we have to hold that. I guess my recommendation, and Sam, and we've all talked about this a little bit, is we need to see this through the bidding process to actually getting a number. Because then I can, we can run the models. We can see about how much we're going to have to borrow and things like that. It'd be a little premature to, I don't want to say panic, but a little premature to start making decisions right now until we know, okay, to Andy's point earlier, wow, this wasn't even right. It's another $10 million. So let's hold on. Or, oh, wow, it really is only $38 million and we're good. But until I think we have somebody who says, I will do this job for this price, I think we, how far we've gone with WIFIA, we just kind of keep going. And maybe make some tough decisions down the road. What?
The WIFIA funding is 38?
38 million.
And if you take that away from 52.
Yeah.
14.
We already had to come up with 20% of the money ourselves. So we're spending impact fees and reserves we have and some future money we will be generating to get to our 20%. So it wasn't that the WIFIA alone was going to pay for everything because they won't. So we have our others. We don't have it up here, but kind of a uses and sources. And the sources showed our 20%. So as it does go up, our 20% has to go up because we can't change the 80%. So it may become, instead of it was an 80-20 project, it actually may become a 70-30. Does that make sense? Project where we'll end up covering more of the cost because the cost came in
to make up this 14.
Yeah, to make up
more of the 14.
It's not really 14. You're really going from 42 to 51 to your 9, okay? The 42 had 4 million, so maybe 5. If we get 2 back, maybe 3. I mean, and this is I know I'm kind of just talking live, but that's where I'm thinking we can pull it off with some more aggressive rate increases. Now, I'm not talking double digits, but 6, 7, 8 kind of thing. Now, so it's doable. But it'd be nice if you guys found $3 million, obviously, you know, and then I only have to find $3 million, kind of. And maybe I have $4 million kind of stashed away with WIFIA, depending on how it all plays out.
I didn't mean that off track.
No, we needed to have this discussion.
We need to talk about more like next month.
No, but we needed
got the numbers so.
Yeah, but we needed to have this discussion a little bit because we are signing a loan agreement, a loan document next week with WIFIA. We're committing to borrow $38 million, and they're expecting us to do something, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah.
And if I can, I'm going to add just two bits of perspective we talked about yesterday in our meeting. Now, this doesn't help find that money and doesn't help the pain of, wow, this is more expensive, but you know, back when this project, even before we got involved, looking at, you know, when you called me, Mike, and said, hey, use an independent check on this. Is this really the right thing to do? Should we save this plant? Should we just scrap it and rebuild? And the decisions were made after lots of evaluation to decide that, yep, let's rebuild this. It's the right thing to do. And despite it going up to 44 and a half million, it still is absolutely the right thing to do. And it is the most economical way to get a reliable, safe 5.4 MGD of capacity. There really is no question about that. So if you're wondering, boy, are we marching down the right path? Should we have just scrapped it and rebuilt? That would cost easily double or even triple, 2.5 times at least, to build a brand new plant on your own property, ignoring the fact that you can't take this out of service for 3 years. So despite the higher cost, it still is the right way to get to get where you need to get to in terms of reliable, safe capacity. And then I'd say the other perspective is that this plant, you know, the existing plant's a funky little plant. There's funky features to it. And we found it might not feel cost-effective, but they are cost-effective ways to
convert that plant. It's reliable, say 5.4 MGD, but it's also a plant that makes sense. It's a well designed. It'll be well easy to operate, and we've addressed all the kind of funkiness that is there. So you're not going to end up with this is not a Band-Aid approach at all. It's a very well designed and will be a great facility for the last quite a long time. And then the third thing I'll just add is we kind of looked at that stuff. Some of when as we got involved, there was some what we thought were going to be good cost saving ideas to figure out how to take advantage of all the assets that are in the plant. And those have proved out. And there are very much cost saving solutions that are shown here that are part of the project.
So it could have been worse.
Silver lining. And I'd say one last thing we talked about yesterday, just a quick piece of context as well. Especially, I think, as far as design detail, the biggest jump is between 30 and 60. So I think, as far as the cost jumping, I think this is the time when that risk is the highest. A piece of context, the same cost estimating team, very different project, but for Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District in Harriman, we are in construction right now on a project. We did that design. There was, and I don't forget the 30% cost estimate, but it was a big jump from 30% to 60%. At 60%, our cost estimate was a much larger project and plant, but it was $110 million. At 90%, contingency goes away. We just did, and I can't promise it'll happen here, but that actually did kind of play out. It went from 110 down to 106 million was our 90% cost estimate, final cost estimate of the project. And then on bid day, bids came in. The low bid was 100 million, really happy. The middle bid was right around our cost estimate, plus or minus 500,000 or so, if I remember correctly. And then the high bid was between 110 and 115 million. And so a good track record of, we weren't, at least in that case, and actually we have a good track record in local projects, not just that project, but we haven't been low with our cost estimate, which is good. It gives it on bid day. It gives some confidence on bid day that we're in the ballpark. And so I think there's definitely, as design progresses and as we continue, the 90% will be more confidence. Contingency comes down because detail's a lot more there. And so that's another good time to, really revisit, and then especially on the bid day. That's of course the most important thing. But I just wanted to give that context of what's our track record of cost estimates, especially at this 60% design. So,
yeah. Any other slides?
There was a couple of things on next steps, mostly just that we can continue with the.
Don't we have the timeline coming up?
Yeah, and there will be. So first of all, just on this, we're going to go proceed with the 90% design. In fact, includes continuing coordinating with the county and promontory, especially addressing that. Some more detail and rework on the site grading, and also adding landscape architecture design to really make sure we're meeting the requirements, and also helping screen that building, kind of talking maybe some trees and things like that. And then more collaboration with staff on the work restrictions and construction sequencing, making sure we're meeting needs during construction. So that's a big thing that happens between 60 and 90. And then one more slide kind of gives an overview of a little bit of the schedule. Just as of right now, this assumes no chemical building changes. I think we kind of confirmed that we've got some additional conversations and information from the county, working with the planning department, some other things. So I think this might push a little bit, but as of right now, the snapshot is planning on delivering this 90% design in late May, getting the 100% design bid set ready by late July, and then really soon after starting the bid period, bid opening, bid spec. Contractors in the middle of September starting construction.
So that's changed from yesterday. Yesterday you had it pushing bid
Yeah, I guess by yesterday.
It was March, construction of March of 27th. So was it this one or that?
Yeah, this was the funny thing is, even though I'm presenting this second, this was the earlier snapshot because I had to get into the board ago. So I think what we were talking about yesterday was assuming, so that's true. I think I was assuming bid would be in October because of a bit extra time to configure the height of the chemical building. Yeah, the chemical building changed. So yeah, that's true. So it's mid-October. And then because of that mid-October timeframe, we have a contractor on board by November. And that is proceed approximately. And then because of that November timeframe, the March was starting excavation. We kind of have to wait for the winter to be done. So that major work. There could be other things. There's going to be submittals, maybe some mobilization.
So let's negotiate the contract.
Negotiate the contract. Some different things that would happen. But anyway, so that's true. Yesterday, I kind of gave an updated snapshot.
But we do think we're changing the chemical building.
Yes.
So
yes.
Those are
just
get shifted by them.
It makes more sense to do the construction when we're out of our heavy water season, right?
The nice thing is the chemical building can be done whenever.
Yeah, the plant shutdown is looking at the winter of 27-28. Mm-hmm. Like all the stuff that would take the plant out of commission is in that window, our downtime is.
The fall of 27 and spring of 28.
Yeah, yesterday we were talking about October, or October, November, December, January, February. Anyway, five months. It's a 5 month shutdown.
The winter of 27-28. Yeah. They're full, and that's where we need to kind of sharpen the pencils with the work restrictions and start constructing sequencing. But it'll, there's other work that can happen outside that shutdown window. So I don't think the plant will be like fully done by that spring of 28, but like that, a lot of that really important work that needs to happen during the plant.
I just feel like I need to say this. I'm not sure why, but so Wednesday we signed the WIFIA loan. We're committing to do this in a way because there won't be an offering. Maybe it's not doing it all, but we're doing something. So even though we don't know everything, we'll just have to react to whatever comes after that. Because there's no going back after we take $38 million from the EPA. So I'm comfortable. Like I said, I don't think it's insurmountable, but we can't, unfortunately, the timing's worked out that we can't fully flush this before we're actually committing to do it.
I think the board's all on board with that.
Okay. As long as you guys are on board with that, I'm okay. But I just didn't want
to. I think the issue is we also have to be cognizant of our ratepayers.
Yes.
And if this continues to increase, we go in the direction that sometimes designs do is you work towards the end and conditions change and all of a sudden tanks are going horizontal. We're going to have to do something different because I don't see double-digit rate increases as something we can cross.
Okay. So. Well, and that's good to know that too. As I'm building the model, I will build, try to do, make sure that doesn't happen. Let's say another one.
Yeah. I get a 9.9.
Just like gas, really, just paying that 0.9.
Fair amount.
We'll start a GoFundMe.
Got time to do a little revenue review? Yeah, if you guys would like to see if you have any questions or anything about the model, it's kind of fun to.
We talked about doing some bake sales.
Probably.
Lemonade soon.
Probably, yeah.
Well, maybe you just don't retire with all those millions, bro. Maybe donate them to charity.
That'll make up a gap.
You sure? Because my view went to sleep, I had to read you in the meeting. So you give me a second.
Okay, yeah, I can see you joining the meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That comes listen on your side.
Yep. Okay. Bill, can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So this is we need the design, and, you know, 3D model. This is the 3D model itself here. You know, can definitely kind of show different things if you have any questions. But overall, you know, chemical building over on this left hand side. Again, that height will go down as we've talked about. Existing GAC building here, new GAC back here, solids to take the existing concrete building. As we talked about, I think I kind of mentioned this.
Does the building next to the GAC, is that the solids handling?
Yeah.
Does that walk need to get promontoried as well, aesthetically?
It's not
visible.
So hidden back there.
Okay.
Yeah.
They were cool with that.
It's partially buried and partially above. Yes.
I mean, it looks pretty ugly right here.
It's
concrete blocks.
It's a concrete block. Forward forms, you know.
But no, whenever we've had discussion with promontory, they're like top, your only primary concern is what's it look like.
Street
okay.
View. You can't see it from the road.
Can't see it
from the road. Okay.
Yeah, it's back behind it, but it's shorter than the existing, you know, building.
And same with the tank, like we don't need to do any fancy.
Tank's already buried, that's there.
Oh, yeah, that's existing.
That's the existing.
That's the existing.
Yeah, sorry, we're just not an upgrade.
Yeah, no, they just have to build it. It's just to get some, perspective. We haven't shown that perspective. This is that
damn slice
here. This is that lower building where we're allowing snow to build up to that snow. That's kind of that extra $500,000 from 30 to 60 is that little kind of wing of the new GAC.
So they're not connected anymore.
They are connected. It's just kind of that's a
roof.
It's a roof. It's a flat roof.
Yeah, do your slice where you drop the section from above.
Yep.
But Brad was explaining yesterday that if we try to tie both the buildings together, you're going to have to make serious infrastructure so that's existing.
Yes, you can see how it's got
levels are off.
You got the pumps and everything underneath it.
So this is, and I'm kind of doing a cross section. You can kind of see I'm cutting through a GAC, new GAC contactor here, but it's actually we're putting the backwash pump to the GAC underneath that lower flat. So that's the best. So yeah, some just different. Use this again, current view has just the boxes in this overall campus model. I have another model that shows those actual racks with membranes and everything, but so just kind of the various improvements. Existing kind of looking down on the existing facility. Again, this is that belt conveyor. How we were able to make that work is they can go up at like a incline with this one belt conveyor manufacturer, like it's up high and then go into over into the existing GAC. And currently, this mezzanine area is currently shown. That's an existing that kind of this model right now, the way I have it, so it's showing some existing and some new. So that'll go away and kind of dump into a dump truck.
Membranes still get the picture. They come up with a really neat design that's really space efficient. The footprint for the membranes almost reduces.
Yeah.
But we like essentially our doubling amount of water we can put.
Get rid of all the other holding tanks on each skid. I only have to have two tanks.
Dedicated clean in place tank for bringing the chemical treatments to the membranes.
Backwash tank here, so rather than have an individual just kind of tightens up that footprint. What this also does by kind of doing this, it's shows this very well. Yeah, so we are next to the existing kind of rooms here, right? There's the existing electrical room. We're adding another electrical room for new VFDs and things like that for new pumps, the vertical flocculators. And then this other room here, kind of set that up to be in office, but then yesterday talking to Grant, maybe attention to the lab or something. So this is an additional space to help plant staff.
That's pretty slick with that, really efficient footprint for the membrane, new membranes.
We get to clean up a lot of stuff, too. I mean, there's some stuff that has happened over the years that has made quagmire occlusion, wiring, electrical stuff, and that all gets cleaned up. Future-proofing some of that stuff. Keep in mind some of the electrical panels are in here, some of the ones that were in there when the building was flooded early on, right? So, and they're 25-plus years old for some of them. And we've replaced drives and things like that. But to get replacement parts for those panels is extremely expensive. It's more expensive than a new section of the electrical cabinet.
And it's good near the chemical building, so the open space and chlorine dioxide can be set aside. Upper left is the new acid tank, right?
Yeah, to the left here.
Bulk acid will be one of the improvements we're making in the process as a pH or.
And we'll have proper containment.
Yeah, these containment walls where each storage tank is that. And that really helps safety. And they, most of the time, what we're operators dealing with, they're dealing with the, the metering pumps. So that's inside the containment area. If that were to leak, it would be inside a contained area. But they can stand out the site on this side at that kind of little wall that's about just 3 feet high, and they can, calibrate the pump or replace hose or whatever they need to do. They can kind of do some maintenance. So it just really improves safety. And if there ever were a leak, it's all contained.
Are those the tanks that turn horizontally?
Yeah.
All the, kind of on the north-ish side of the building, you can see the pictures outside. So that's where all the deliveries will be falling. Yeah.
So that's fishing.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Our treatment plant staff would be hands off with chemical deliveries. Deliveries hook up.
Won't be moving totes around.
Yeah.
Right. Using forklifts.
Yeah, they're kind of. Yeah. Delivery truck driver will hook up a hose and offload this go through piping over right into the storage tanks.
Right. What kind of tanks are they? What are they made of?
We were planning on most of these originally, the vertical ones, we were going to do HDPE to kind of save some money. They'd be really good. We often do FRP, so fiberglass reinforced plastic tanks, even with the vertical, but that's because we're going horizontal, that's what we'll have to do. So a little more expensive for just the tanks themselves. There actually will be less concrete. We have these big concrete pads for the vertical tanks. The horizontal ones will have a couple of concrete saddles that kind of support them. So that goes down. But definitely the footprint savings. Definitely a more expensive tank.
But also a better tank.
Better tank.
No,
longer,
yeah,
better, longer tank. That'll last longer.
Right, how do you get it? Do you repair them? The other nice thing about an FRP tank, you can repair them.
On the HDPE tank, you can't,
but the FRP tank, you can repair, they can reglass the inside, they can fit major cracks.
Right. You don't need doors to get new tanks.
No. And actually, they can even, if you ever had to replace them, you can even bring in sections of the new FRP tanks and pieces. Glass them together, glass the pieces together. So if you ever had to replace them, it's also a slick way you can cut up the existing ones and bring in so we will have, and we still do have a sizable roll up door kind of on the side. It's very similar to that roll up door in the existing case. So.
It looks really nice.
Yeah,
I think so too. Obviously, rightfully so, the focus should be on the cost update. That's good news. I feel in Dockland Brand, we're really happy with how the design has come out from a process perspective. And it's a result of a few really creative and innovative ideas. Direct filtration comes to mind, being more sophisticated, how we're using our GAC
district expansion because this is smaller than what we're envisioning. And then bringing Centerville Basin back to the table. Essentially, walk away through the coming plan. Even with all those things happening, we're happy on the process side.
I saw a process step for future sedimentation out front on the site plan.
Yeah, and we're still preserving space just because that's something we've requested. We want whoever forced in a position or needs it to try and reserve that space and not take
But it is pretty awesome that the direct filtration concept we were able to pilot test, you know, that we hijacked one of the racks and operated it under direct filtration mode, finished that study, and it's still operating like that. And it's the best rack, forming one of the ones they've got. So.
And Brad and Jess are going to be presenting at the ACE conference in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Yes, that's huge.
Yeah, paper based on the pilot.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So
what
that's
on?
Really cool.
Yeah. Really cool.
Washington, D.C. in June.
And
publish
it with them.
Abstract
or paper?
Yeah.
We'll be filling that later. Any other questions or anything else you guys want to see?
I think we've blown our 30 minutes.
Thanks. Thanks for thanks for the time.
No, this is for good. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming out on a Thursday night. Control this with us.
Alan doesn't care. He's 5 minutes.
Thanks for the sandwich, Steve.
Hey, I think there's more.
One for the road. And a great facility. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it?
It is beautiful.
You have this tour?
Where
were we an hour and 15 minutes ago?
Oh, yeah, we were on surface.
Okay, tell us about the surplus vehicle.
So there's three vehicles. We're looking to trade in. We have a price commitment from the dealership for $27,000 for Jayco's old truck. This was one we bought during COVID. It's a, I wouldn't call it, we're glad to have it leaving the fleet, let's say. The other two, we've got an old truck, just kind of normal F-150 that we'll offer in-house. There might be some interest for that. And then the crane truck, we got a new one. It's in. It looks great. But the old one we can sell, and Casey did some research, and it's probably worth about $20,000.
We think we can get that internal?
This is kind of prepared. Then we kind of send out the dealer. We won't get that internal. It'll go to third-party auction.
Okay.
So nobody wants that internally. Nobody has the need for a crane truck for $20,000.
Yeah, that's here. That seemed odd. Okay.
So, but it we weren't quite sure, and we knew if we say we could offer it internal and we don't, then we can just go third-party because that's kind of the default for all of those. So just would need, and then the disposal is, it's a piece of equipment, it's a motor down at Lost Canyon that's no longer applicable because we've changed the size of that one. Usually we just surplus them. The reason you have to approve it is because the replacement of it is more than $10,000. And that's why that's on there, because even though we're only getting $1,000 for it, the new one is more like $40,000. So according to our rules and regs, if we're surplusing a piece of equipment and the equipment to replace it is more than $10,000, we have to get your approval on it. So that's why that's there.
Okay. That's real good by me.
Do we need to have a motion to
make a motion to approve the surplus?
Isn't
that all just in the
consent agenda? That's in the consent agenda. And then the next piece is the three POs. the Old Ranch well, that bid did come in under estimate, so that's still looking like we'll be able to get that under budget. All of the ones that we have gone out for, like the tank and this, have come in under estimates, so that's kind of a good indicator. The transformer down at Lost Canyon, we're building new retaining walls by the pump station where the transformers are to get them more space so they can breathe easier, don't get so hot. So we're doing the wall, and we found a transformer that we can hopefully get. It's kind of a get it approved, get it bought, because a lot
in stock.
It's in stock. Lead time's usually a long time on those.
60 weeks.
So that's the other purchase order. And the last one is the excavator to do the work to move those retaining walls down at Lost Canyon. So we're moving the one for the generators. The other one is more over by the cabin, if you remember down there. We're going to use a retaining wall, redo the retaining wall, and build a garage kind of on top of the retaining wall so that they can store equipment down there and have it protected too. Brandon got those bids that you saw in the packet. He's really happy with this one from Rockport Rocks. That is the Sitaways, who are right down there, who he has a good relationship with. So he's already talking to them. They were much more willing to kind of just work with him on it than the other ones would have just come in and, well, we bid this, this is what we did. I think everybody who's requested these, we got low bids and we liked low. Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. So.
Just a quick clarification for the cabin retaining wall will become the back wall of the future garage. So it's going to be a structural member of the garage that will be out over the current parking.
So better explanation. Thank you.
And the Old Ranch well, Old Ranch, yeah, it's well 17. That's going to be its formal name.
Old Ranch well.
Well, we call it Old Ranch well number 17.
Yeah, where's the 17?
It's like a legacy from the 19 IFSP.
Okay.
So we called it well 17. Because we didn't know where it's going to go.
And the good news about Lamb just recently drilled a well up the street, so he's familiar, neighbors.
Sounds more and more like he's going to be the legacy of Lang. His talent, his outfit might not continue on past him, so it's probably good to have a relationship with
good Jason. Job. And this guy worked for Port Longyear.
Jason, oh yeah.
Do you know?
Oh yeah. Oh, Jason. He's solid. He's running a good company. And a lot of people doubted him. Started out with a great reputation. Glad to see him. So good.
Anyone have any other questions on the consent agenda?
I had a question on the Lamb drilling letter that they submitted on the 28th. They said that they were proposing 1,525 horsepower motor. Possible to generate 700 gallons a minute. You have to go to a 12 or 14 inch casing.
Yeah, we'll work through all that. We've got the EDM folks are under contract to do the well equipment design. I'd have to reread it. Is he talking about the airlift pump or the aquifer testing?
That's just for his development.
Yeah. Okay, well, see what the wall does when I do that. Those are pretty rosy, optimistic numbers.
Yeah, do you really think you can get close to 700? Yeah, I think that's a non-issue.
I think 300 would be a great result.
You'd be doing cartwheels. If we can get the 700, we'll pay whatever the hell that's. Get that pump in there. Take it and run. Yeah,
I think it was part of his response to the bid docs. Just a stronger letter. Just constructing it. This
was for the development. So, like, yeah, you put it in, then you're like testing it out, developing out your sands and stuff. So, yeah, you can't just slam the pipe down there. You got to do all that rehab stuff on the backside, and then
once you got that in there and that capability, you can also do some of the initial Lachlan testing, which I'm assuming Lachlan's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's just showing that he understands the business. He's telling you what the capabilities are. This is your max. And he's getting us all excited that maybe we can get some of
that. Drill ourselves.
Good business owner.
Okay, thanks.
All right. That was it then. Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Bill?
You give a thumbs up.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So that's the end of it? The unmute takes a second to click in, so.
Thumbs perfect. Yes,
yeah. Okay, Steve, you're back on for
financial. You know, January is always a strange month. Don't read too much into much of what we see here. We did end up a little bit over revenue by $25,000, mainly thanks to the Utah Olympic Park for taking a lot more water in January than they normally ever do because they couldn't make snow until January. Expenses in January was kind of interesting because as we go through the audit, you tend to take a lot of expenses back in December. So January is often under budget. So probably the most, as we scroll down, probably the most critical thing to pick up is, water sales kind of were just a little positive. We'll get to that a little bit later. We were under quite a bit on residential because there wasn't much occupancy, but Utah Olympic Park used a lot. So that made up for that shortage and covered it a little bit more. Development-related collections, we only collected one impact fee in January. So that was kind of surprising, but it's January, and there's not a lot of people in town to sell homes to, or lots to. Expenses, like I said, don't read too much into this. You know, it's just kind of January. At least we're under budget. It's early. Give it a little time. Let it ferment a little bit. We'll see where we're at. Let's go ahead and scroll down. Cash. I'm going to go into cash a little deeper because I think, Karen, you wanted me to kind of go through a little bit.
I thought that Bill is new, you know, just to understand all these. Reserves.
So we'll skip that for now because I'm going to go over something else in just a minute. Customer growth, there's the one new connection. It was in Promontory. Impact fee was about $6,600. So lowest we've had in several years. Good news, we have had about 8 or 9 so far in February. So it's picking up a little bit.
There's been quite a few applications too.
Promontory only had one lot sold. They've also sold like 3 or 4 lots in February. So seems to be picking up everywhere a little bit. The usage, probably the big number there, we were pretty much stagnant on MRW. So even with the growth of population, we still only use about the same water, kind of part of the reason we're under budget. The 14.6 in the lime green, that was Utah Olympic Park. They're usually, you know, average 5. So they were almost triple what they normally take in January. Park City was right kind of where we would expect it. And some of water is done. But I just show that for historical information. And then, whoops. So our blue dot is our new year, and it's just a little bit above last year, which is what you'd want to see given our rate increase in growth and things like that. How we got there is the interesting part. On the next slide, you'll see that residential was under. Everybody else is pretty tight to budget, except the wholesale, that is Utah Olympic Park. So they pushed it over, and so that's where we ended up positive sales. So that's kind of, you know, let's not spend a lot of time on it. It's January. Mm-hmm. But by the first quarter, we'll start to get a better feel on expenses. And then second quarter, third quarter, we get a feeling on revenue. So, all right. Let's jump to that cash summary really quick. So this is, I put this in the quarterly packet for everybody, but I thought this might be easy, Phil. So if you kind of focus on the green lines, so the top bar is operating cash reserves. This is kind of the money we just are churning and burning through. The key number is the 280 days underneath that. Compared to last year, over to the far right, it's 266. So we're, you know, and our operating expenses go up. So we actually have to have more cash to have the same amount of days covered. And we're fine there. The next green bar is money we have, but is restricted on how we can use it. Impact fees, we can only use on things in our IFP. the rainy stabilization fund we have to keep as part of our bond, like, hey, it's our rainy day fund kind of with them. The assessments from Promontory that we have, you know, to pay their bond, the Promontory stabilization, just in case they can't pay us, we keep some of their money so that we can make sure we have money. And then Stagecoach and Community Water Reserves. So that's money we hold, but it's earmarked to specific things. The next green line is restricted for capital facility reserves. So if you'll notice right now, that top line is 2.4 million. Last year was only about 1.3. Due to our bonding with the state, every year we have to put 5% of our operating budget into that fund. As soon as we get the final invoice on Matterhorn, we're going to get all that money. We're going to take that money out of that line and move it up to the top line because it's no longer restricted. So we just have to show them we spend it on some kind of repair replacement. So even though it's really high right now and a lot higher than last year, it's going to drop. And then that's kind of our, I call it, well, I think of it as it's our line replacement fund a lot of the times kind of thing. As you go down to the bottom, this is other cash that's restricted for kind of specific things. There are certain things you guys can do, like the regionalization reserve and the drought reserve is controlled by the board. If we ask and you guys approve it, we could move that into another category or spend it on something specific. The treatment plant operating reserve is to offset, because even though we expense GAC and membranes over time, we have to come up with the cash up front. So that's to make sure we always have the cash to buy that stuff. Customer deposits, that's the $1,500 people put with us that when we refund when they get the final inspection. The other deposits is the contractors that instead of bonding, they put cash on hold with us until the job's done, and then we release that. A lot did that during, if you look at last year, we only had 617,000, now we're over a million because more and more seem to be doing that for some reason. They'd rather come up with cash than try to go bond. Now,
the customer deposits, I've never thought about that. That's just the $1,500 held per customer?
Yeah.
That's a lot of customers.
And it's come down quite a bit. Well, oh, actually, at one point during COVID, when we had all the impact, it was over $1 million because we had so many people who were in the building phase. So it's starting to come down. It is quite a few.
There's that many lots out there?
Yeah.
1,500 divided into 700.
Those are hydrants too, though.
Yeah, there's some hydrants in there, but only about $100,000 of hydrants, $70,000, $80,000, but it's some. I want to say just
part of the development. So it's lots and pieces of development.
Okay. The other one, the Series 2023 bonds, that's what's left of the construction cash of the $18 million. That number, in February, we've already reimbursed ourselves $900,000 out of that. So it's gone from that fund up to the top to whatever we can spend it on. Because basically we paid it out of our money, and now we get it out of the construction cash. So the construction cash is, balance is about $600,000 right now. And we maybe will have one more bill for $200,000 or $300,000 from Oakland. So that's, so the $24 million, almost $25 million sounds like a lot of money, but a lot of it, what we really operate on is kind of the top line. Everything else is kind of reserved, but it does help with capital projects. The impact fees, for example, the $5 million, we're going to go through a lot of those this year. First, we're going to pay for the 224 line out of that. That's about $2.3 million. We'll use some of that potentially on the old ranch well, some of that on the treatment plant stuff so that we don't have to draw down on the Wookiee loan soon. But yeah, so kind of more of a, does that help, Phil? I know it's a lot and I'm talking fast and there's lots of green bars, but,
but definitely
that gives everybody a little bit of understanding. Okay.
Yeah, that was great. No,
I think it's always,
I just think sometimes we're like, oh, we've got to spend $50 million, but we've got half of it right here. And, not completely,
Doesn't work that way. We tend to have a lot of money that is restricted to what we can use it on and when we can use it kind of things.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Is there anything else in my section?
You have an audit update and a WIPIA update.
So the auditors are coming out March, the week of March 23rd through the 27th. I'm working on the final trial balance. Lisa's getting final URS numbers. We'll roll that all into them, and everything's kind of on schedule. No surprises. We don't have the big promontory assessment decision that we had to go through last year.
We're using the same guys, right?
We're using the same guys, yeah. So second year should always be easier with the same guys. First year was a little brutal. Let's see. With the update, Andy kind of gave that. We had the call this morning. We explained we may need more money. They didn't balk at that. They just said, well, you could come through us because you've done a lot of the groundwork. We could do a second loan because all the environmental studies and kind of knowing all the project, all that kind of stuff. Or we could go to market. They said, yeah, you have to notify us, but they didn't have heartburn on that either. So we still don't have the letter signed by the director of the EPA, but they're optimistic they'll get it. We're still planning on closing next Wednesday. All of our paperwork is signed on our end.
Not yet.
Andy's got to go tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Canis and Eve still have to sign.
And the IRS has to give me the IRS. I'm waiting on our SAM registration being renewed and successful because our address changed. And I like having to provide my firstborn's DNA in order to. They don't like the documentation I provide. We're working through. We got letters from banks today.
Yes.
So that should be fine. We'll just be in default on the loan update.
In addition to the cash that I just reviewed, there is the semi-annual report in there that I do for December 1st and December 31st and June 30th that I report to the state. So it's in there for you guys to review, kind of show how many checks were outstanding of the year and deposits outstanding and all that kind of stuff. When we do that in July, we will review the money policy again on where we can invest funds and things like that, because that's a requirement of the state now that we review that on an annual basis, what our policy is on how we manage our money. Basically, it's what the state tells us to do, but we have to say we're going to do what the state tells us to do. All right. Anything else? Yeah. Keep us moving along. Get us out of here tonight. Steve. Thanks, Steve.
So, Sam, tell us about this 2026 Water and Energy Report. I thought it was fascinating.
I second that.
Yeah. Maybe not as much as PFAS, but pretty close.
Oh, yeah. PFAS was better.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
So, again, Andy's asked us to communicate better from the technical side of the house, kind of like nuts and bolts of the district. And I'd get bored just doing the same report every month, so I don't want to do that. You guys don't want to hear it, probably. So this was one of the ideas I had, and kind of set this up so we can update it annually and then start tracking metrics over time, which I think will be helpful too. Everything in this report is just last year's data. So Chris got Rocky Mountain Power to pull every power meter in the district. And then I pulled out the data from anything that moves water, so like a source, a well, or the treatment plant, or a pump station, like a booster pump station. And then there's two metrics. There's a couple of different ways we could have looked at it, but I kind of liked how the kilowatt hours turned out. Kilowatt hour, there's two main metrics in the report or memo. Kilowatt hours are like the standard metric for energy and like electrical engineering or electrical work, however you want to think about it. And then I guess power would be the other one that would be included in a normal utility bill. Energy and power, so that'd be kilowatt hours, watts or kilowatts would be unit power there, or horsepower, material units. And then like a car analogy is really common there, where you want to like think about how those are related. If you're driving your car, watching the odometer, like Homer, that'd be like energy, like how much mileage are you putting on the system or the system. And then the speedometer, how fast you're going, would be the power metric. That's kind of all those two things. And then a power bill, doesn't matter. We get dinged for our maximum speed. So you hit 80 miles an hour, but then cruise back down to 40. We're getting billed for that's kind of like. But the main metrics in like a utility rate schedule. So this figure, again, kilowatt hours of energy is kind of what we're looking at. The blue bars are the total
cumulative kilowatt hours from the past year. And this chart isn't very useful except to show that Lost Canyon uses more energy than the rest of the pump stations combined in the district. And it's not close. It's like the rest combined are between 2 and 3 million kilowatt hours. I don't know, that's a lot less than 4. So the next chart, Lost Canyon drops off just so we can kind of compare them. So this is every other pump station in the district. And then the orange bar is specific energy. And that's how much energy it takes to move 1,000 gallons of water. And those metrics are kind of arbitrary. We can use a million gallons or whatever.
Can I ask a question on the preserve one?
Yeah.
Is that related to Brian's slides? Preserve, there was the huge blowout. They're losing water underneath the building. Is that why your efficiency is so bad on that one?
It's always been pretty poor.
Is it going to be really good next year when you update this for us?
Hey, Joe.
Oh, shit.
Like a 6 gallon.
Okay, it doesn't explain all that. Yeah. All right. I could hope.
Orange line, so yeah, blue bar, how much energy are we putting through this? And then orange, let's standardize those. We can compare across facilities how efficient are they. So usage or mileage would be blue bar, and then how efficient are our miles per gallon is orange. So things that stick out on this chart are, yep, to me, Bear Hollow and Preserve. Kind of wrote up at the end of the memo. We'll take a look at those, and I've already kicked around a couple ideas. It might be the case that Preserve is just going to be an inefficient facility. And at least on the positive, it's not a huge energy user.
But potentially it is something as simple as like you need a different pump or a different configuration, and you can drop that down.
Yeah,
it seems like you're fairly consistent across the district. This was fascinating to me.
Yeah, so the less efficient systems are kind of stacked systems. Mm-hmm. So you can see the Colony, White Pine, Dutch McDonald, those are all high energy users. Water has to pass through the lower pump stations.
Yeah.
And you see the same thing on the Northridge, Blackhawk. Glenwell is surprisingly efficient just looking at energy. All right, so let's look at our pump station.
Sam, quick question. Are there other uses of power other than pumping at these stations?
Oh, sure. So the other nuance that's probably, don't want to get too much into it, but this is just looking at a single power meter. So, for example, like when we look at the treatment plant facility, that's everything that happens behind the treatment plant power meter. So lights.
Okay.
You know, everything at that facility. So we're not parsing out data from like
pumping's probably the biggest draw, right? By far.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's night and day when you look at a control valve station that's just heating in the winter versus a well or pump station. You know, they're orders of magnitude, or at least an order of magnitude generally.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, there's also some fairly large space heaters in some of those small buildings too.
And we can do the sources. So those are all the pump stations. These are all the sources. So this we can maybe have like some more actionable outcomes. The most obvious thing here is signals, even before the solar panels, but certainly now by far the most efficient source in the district. A lot, and then BBC, of course, stand out just in their production. It's also a super efficient source. Signal Hill and 15BC are kind of outliers in the system, and the system, which is, we wouldn't really have the system we have now without. So we lean on them super hard, and that's a good thing to do. I think they're efficient, and they have a water rinse to catch to. And keep going down. So this last chart, and then I'll be done, wrap up. So this groups all the groundwater sources except 15B and C. So the plant and 15B and C aren't on this chart, but if you plotted them, they would be way, way, way off to the right there, just because how efficient and how much production we get. But it kind of broke down into
you know, three groups of wells. So we're gonna take these groups and take a look at our SCADA priorities and just make sure that we largely are, but make sure we're prioritizing the right wells when we can from like an energy perspective. You know, our worst sources, just by these metrics, energy perspective. Some peak well, two, active well, three mile well. We'll make sure those are only peaking sources. And lean on, you know, the our green box or the primary sources we can to supplement the plant in 15 groups. So anyways, this is the first crack at it, and we'll update it next year. And yeah, hopefully, like, showing some of the metrics over time will be helpful. Do some trends and make some decisions.
Well, I really liked it. You know, I thought it was interesting and just kind of gives us an understanding of all of this. So, it's great. Any other questions on that, guys? Okay. And then is this you, Andy, the consideration for our recommendation?
Please, on myself. Well, it says please on the memo, so I'll defer.
Yes, it is.
You're going to defer to me? Okay. So we've been talking about updating our policies, going through that process. And we've started with our bylaws and our personnel policies first. The bylaws just include the recommendation of an audit committee. We talked about that at the end of the year during the fraud report that they provide to you annually. I had a red line behind the memo. That red line changed slightly. Ryan Stack, in Dave Thomas's office, had a little change. It didn't change any of the theory behind it. It was just kind of a wording change.
Is that the standalone paragraph?
Yeah, the standalone paragraph.
Okay, stop.
I just redlined it from our original. Yeah. It was really, this powers remain the same. Largely, they'll be nominated the same. We'll do it during our annual meeting. The chair's one that nominates, and we ask for two people on that committee. And it just helps provide a separate entity that, normally in the past, the finance team is kind of, you know, work directly with the auditors. This allows more involvement from that audit committee with the outside to have discussions, you know, about management. So it just allows for a little bit more of an oversight role rather than just the finance committee that we have. So that was the red line for that. And then the personnel policies, I will say majority of those you noticed were in our section 9 on the benefit section. Three of those were primarily related to updates the county has done in the last 3 years since we've updated our policies. The PTO, moving to the district to a PTO policy from a vacation sick policy. Moving to...
And that's similar with the county as well.
Yeah, the county moved January 1st.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, there's also a legislative bill running through this session to have state employees move to a PTO. I don't know if it'll go through, but they're obviously looking at it. So, can you scroll down a little bit, Chris? We talked about the PTO. We've changed. We're calling it a funeral leave. We are more aligning that to a bereavement leave. And previously, we had called out two separate categories of family members and what you qualified for 40 hours or 8 hours. We just lumped that all family members into one bucket. And there you're able to take up to 40 hours to do a bereavement leave. That is the same as the county policy.
And that was immediate family or anyone?
There were two different groups, right? Yeah, there were two different groups, and it's going to go to everyone's in one group. So previously, like, grandparents had been called out separately, and a mother-in-law.
Yep, step.
Or a step. Yeah, so it kind of was.
After what I read through it, there were still two separate.
Oh, there's a separate one for like,
with things I'd never even heard of, like a child-in-law or a sibling-in-law.
Yeah.
So
this kind of moved what we originally had designated as only the 8 hours up into the 40, and then there's this kind of at the manager's discretion, too. I think it does the general manager's discretion. The next section, we added language to describe an adult designee for insurance coverage related to a domestic partner. That falls within the IRS rules, and we didn't have a formal policy statement in our district policy describing that. So we've now added that language, and so that helps clean up that and also conforms to what the county's doing. We are asking to change our parental leave to be available only after the 6-month orientation is completed. So if an employee comes in, they're going through that orientation period, you couldn't come in and immediately go on paternal leave. You would need to do it after that 6-month window. The clarifications really is what it was in the FMLA section, is just to more clearly define if you're going out on a short-term disability leave, depending on the circumstances, your FMLA leave can run concurrent. So it just really, if you looked at it, it's more just adding more definition and clarification to how that policy runs if somebody should run into that situation. Fortunately, we haven't run into a situation like that, but other special service districts have. So we were kind of updating our policies to more clearly define that so that there aren't any loopholes or gray areas. We are looking to increase our housing transportation allowance from $250 per month to $300 a month. The last time that was changed was in 2022. So
how many people get that? Or is that everyone?
10 people. It's 10 everyone people? Who doesn't take a vehicle home. Okay. And we also added a statement in there about the district's policy on clothing allowance. That's come up recently, and so we just wanted to make sure we had something very clearly stated in there that that clothing allowance was just for the employee and what the intended purpose of that was for. For safety, it's for being professional out in the workplace, and so we just wanted to make that. There were some other minor changes, some cleanup I mentioned about personal or persons who are responsible for different areas. We had to flow the PTO through the rest of the document, so there were some updates there. We added an employee referral bonus program in Section 8. So if an employee does have someone that they want to refer to an open position, they would be eligible for a bonus of $1,000. They would first get that once the employee had successfully completed 30 days. They get half, and then at the end of that orientation period would be the additional $500. I think we've had some success with word of mouth, so we just wanted to continue to promote that as it continues to grow. We put some more definition around the vehicle reimbursement policy and what we're doing when employees use a personal vehicle and a district vehicle is available. Occasionally that will happen when employees want to take a family member or something to go out, so we don't reimburse that full rate. We only reimburse that medical rate, just more clearly defining that. Other mining wording changes, compliance officer and safety committee. Those were really the major sections that we're updating on this round of changes. This is a recommendation to County Council. It has been looked at by Helen in Dave Thomas's office. David Warnock has looked at it. They're both okay with it. Ryan Stack looked at our bylaws. He's okay with it. So I think the county's legal is good with the changes as they are. We'll then need to get in front of council, which is, I think, the same time as the
March 25th. Parameters
resolution, so March 25th. We'll then get that update, to get that completed. We will sit down and have a meeting with the employees to go over all the changes and what that means for them. And we're looking to have these become effective July 1st. That's when we would change to this new vacation policy and kind of, you know, have that mid-year as the starting point rather than starting it anytime, rather than waiting till the end of the year. Questions?
Well, I had some questions, though. We're switching to PTO, and it looks like the amount of PTO obviously is higher than the amount of vacation. Is that just because the sick time or what was formerly known as sick time has been incorporated into it?
Correct. So right now, employees accrue, it's about 96 working 96 hours a year, and you can crew up to a maximum of 400. So, and many employees are at that max. So they have 400 hours in a sick bucket. And then for vacation, the largest max that you can get up to is 192 hours. So that's how we're combining those to get to that 600 hour combined max.
Okay, and that's similar to what the county has?
It's the exact same policy.
Okay, exact same as well.
Yeah,
okay.
Nothing different. We just
sometimes I've slept since I made my notes. Oh, and then you had something in there that talked about a personal holiday or earned holiday leave. Is that still part of the PTO, or what is?
We have a separate 8-hour personal holiday that employees get every year. It's essentially their birthday off, and that's outside of the PTO. And that does not accrue. It's just a use it or lose it. So you get 1 8-hour day, and we ask that you take it as a day, not 4 hours a year and 4 hours. And then that, if you don't use it by the end of the year, it goes away and you get nothing. So that's outside of the PTO.
Okay. And then, oh, I just, you know, how I love acronyms. Maybe the acronym STD is a little creepy in the policies.
Who wants to spell out short-term disability?
Yeah.
Okay. So. We can spell it out.
Yeah. Well, or find a different acronym. I was reading that and I was like, ah. And then it was again and again and again. And I was like, oh. But those are my only questions. Did anyone else have any questions? Do we need somebody to make a recommendation?
Yes, sure. Recommendation of approval to the Summit County Council. Proposed changes to the district's bylaws and personnel policies as discussed and reviewed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Bill, there's a thumbs up.
Okay, that's unanimous. Andy?
So I put those things on the agenda so I didn't forget. So we can move on.
Okay.
Check those both off.
Check.
And then did anyone have any questions on the department updates?
I asked my one on reserve leak already and confirmed the name for the new one. Yep. I'm good.
I just had questions on, are there any particular water bills going through the legislature that we're keeping an eye on?
Yes, there's an interesting one I just talked about today in the in our admin meeting. Last year we talked about it a little bit. HB 280, I believe, was passed a year or two ago, and it starts this unified water infrastructure project where we're putting everything on a list. So now they're now at the point where they're trying to figure out how they're going to fund the projects. And there was talk last year about us having a fee charged to all utilities and then remitting that to the state, and then they would decide how that was prioritized and how projects were funded. This new bill, HB 501, that's running right now, I watched it in committee on Tuesday night. It's still in the House. They haven't signed up on it yet. It is looking at its, I think it's on its second, first or second sub. It's under that same theory that there will be a collection at the local level on culinary water providers. Does not cover secondary, does not cover agriculture. So the new benchmark that they're using is the MAGI. Does anybody need to talk about it? The median adjusted gross income. It's starting to get out there what this bill looks like anyway. So they're tying it to the median adjusted gross income of communities in your service area. And they're saying that the EPA standard for a water sewer combined percentage of your MAGI is about 3-4%, and Utah's is more around like 1-1.5. So they're saying that we have room in our local collecting authority to charge more, another percent and a half, if you will, if you're doing the math, to collect that revenue stream, because their essential state we've been under collecting. Originally, the bill said that money would be collected and go to the state. They have backed off on that and said it will now be held and paid for local projects. It will not be remitted to the state. It is not mandatory. Originally, it was. It's now become a non-mandatory. However, if you are not doing this, then you will not have access to state revolving funds. So this is getting the smaller, in my opinion, legitimately trying to get those smaller rural areas who have been under collecting. Pretty significant increases to your water bills, which they're not used to seeing or paying, in order to access that state funding that they otherwise have been able to do without. This is rubbing some of those communities the wrong way, and that came across in the committee meeting that I was watching. They passed it through, but with reservation. I think there's more work to be done on this bill. It's not over by any means. I think they may want to exclude some folks, maybe make some exceptions. I think there's going to be definitely more massaging of what's going on. But they're at the end of the day, they're ultimately trying to get at how are we going to fund this and who's going to, and how are we going to go about doing it? Because we have this huge list, and they're saying it's $1.2 billion a year that we need to get out of projects in order to get UTEP's infrastructure up to speed. And how are we going to go about collecting that? And we've been behind the curve ball, or, you know, the eight ball, so now we're trying to make up curve.
Just water infrastructure?
One of the most water, no, it's got water, secondary, and ag, all is in that unified list. So that's where it gets. Sorry. Everybody's not, it's kind of on the backs of the culinary water providers.
And I think the first year UWIP number was like $17 million of projects.
$17 million?
It was a ridiculously high number. Billion. Oh, sorry. Like, million.
Billion. Yeah. Karen will write a check.
Yeah.
Just raise rates.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So they would expect everybody to raise rates over 100%?
If you want to have access to the state revolving funds. So it's not mandatory. You don't have to. But if you want to be able to access that, then you would need to do that.
Ian would probably not.
Well, and the interesting thing is, if we really raise those rates, we could just bond for that much money or more. I mean, there's math to be done. Like, so what? We don't want to be part of a revolving fund, but if we raise our rates, we'll just go get that money ourselves. Then we know we get it instead of it being kept for the local area, however they define it. That might be some account, it might be by county, or I mean, it doesn't mean it's ours.
So we would be collecting it, but we have to share it with the secondary and the sewer.
Not sewer, because they're using a metric of 1.5% for Mountain Regional. If we just provide water, okay, then our percentage will be 1.5. And so this, if we were doing both, then it could be up to 3%. So if you were like, you know, doing sewer and water, then you could do up to 3%.
Okay, it's not like we're controlling somebody else's money.
No.
Okay.
So that's probably one of the more interesting bills. There have been some conservation, a lot of Great Salt Lake trying to get water into the lake. How do we make that, you know, the easiest route? Removing burdens, whether it relates to water rights or other things, in order to get that water to the Great Salt Lake. Not a lot of teeth, but some just, hey, don't use overhead spray during daylight hours, trying to help some of the state facilities reduce the amount of turf they have, and really it only in action, or, you know, activity related areas where they're doing turf. There've only been a few enrolled so far, and there are quite a few water bills, I'd say. It seems like it's pretty chaotic. There's a lot of bills and chaos from what I've just, you know, here in general, in this legislative session. So it goes until the beginning of March, and then I'll give a report back on what went through and what didn't. All right.
Can I ask Sam a question? How does the county enforce the Fluorwax ban?
That's a good question.
Oh, I've
I think our main thing I've had in mind that we could actually do is actual. If we do have a band, I think we could signage at all, like Nordic areas that are outside of Park City municipal boundary. Because they may have a band within their city boundary. There's a one county line. So, but really, do we have any teeth? Like, we're not going to be testing people's skis or whatever. Yeah, the outreach, signage. Yeah, check my crotch. Yeah, that would kind of be the pathway. I guess. Yeah, when you look at PFAS compounds between us and Park City, there's not much carryover, I guess, in my opinion. But the Old Ranch well is going to be much closer to Park City's problem well than anything else in the district. And, I'm not a Nordic skier, but I believe there's Nordic skiing on Willow Creek. So, I mean, it is something that's potentially an issue for us. I think that's a positive thing. We could try to be a little proactive to give them a new well site, and trying to protect them. So
did anyone else have any questions? The department updates. Can we?
What does Weber Basin get? Make the call on their drought level.
We have a meeting on March 10th at 9 a.m. So that's to go over drought, what they're looking at, what they're forecasting, and then we'll bring that back to you. Well, we'll update you from that meeting on our March board meeting. I think Weber Basin makes their decision the last week of March. They go to their board, and then we make that decision in our April meeting. But if we are in a drought situation, we get signaling from Weber Basin that is the case, we will be heavily involved then in updating our drought policy, our drought that stands right now, and also doing, with everything else that's going on, looking at what rates might be, we might need to be instituting this summer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last meeting I think I brought it up. I've been working on it a little bit, so we've got an idea, but it is interesting what we may have to do on those high tiers.
Okay, we do need to go into executive session.
For personnel, so what I'd like to do is ask the board to join me in the small conference room, and Phil will call you because it's not recorded.
Should I jump out of this right here?
No, just you can stay in this. Just mute yourself, okay. And Danny will give you a phone call.
Me?
Okay, sounds good.
Hey, if I'm not here when they come back, it's going
to be around.
You don't have stuff to do tomorrow, do you?
No. You're driving 700 miles. Palm trees.
Phil, are you there?
Do we have a motion to go back about it?
We make a motion to go.
No. Did we make a motion to go into the executive session?
I think we forgot that.
Oh, okay.
Where's Dave?
You got to go do that again. Just kidding.
I think
serious.
You do one.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So motion to go into executive session to talk about personnel.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Nothing from Phil. Phil, are you back with us? No, he's still connected, isn't
he? Do you see him?
Yeah, he's still here. Mm-hmm.
But you still see his face?
No, he's not doing video, but I can see he's unmuted. When he was doing thumbs up, it was like the emoji across the screen.
He's passed out on the floor because he's so sick.
It's something I can't hear you. Okay.
it might be my end at least, but your bus that might not switch back.
You're fine. We can just go this way.
Did we go back? Okay.
Yes. So we just wanted approval to go into executive session. So the three of us have approved it, and we're just waiting to see if you're okay with it or not okay with it.
Yep, I'm on board.
Okay.
Okay, and then motion to go back into session, or sorry, motion to go out of executive session talking about personnel.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. We're legal.
Last item on the agenda, I'm requesting permission from the control board to change our credit card providers. We currently use Zions Bank. Their reporting mechanism is not, it's very difficult to navigate. Bill Divi, down in Silicon Slope, local provider. Steve and I did a demo with them. They have a better reporting system, should get better response for manager approval, easier to navigate through their system. There is no fee. We split the credit card interchange. The cash back program is similar. If we want to pay more frequently, it could be better. I think this, from an audit perspective, is a better tool for us to use as a district. So I'm requesting permission to move providers.
Makes sense to me.
I don't either. Do we need a motion?
I believe we do because it says it in the policy.
Okay.
So, motion to move ahead with approving credit card vendor change per discussion in session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Bill?
Aye.
Thank you. Chris was going to say
something. Okay, that's unanimous.
I'm watching the screen. There's a little QC going on.
Okay. There's nothing else. We have a motion to adjourn.
I have a question about Water Users Workshop coming up in March. Send it anybody to that?
Lisa, Steve, Ryan Williams, and myself will be attending.
Very good. I think that's
Yeah, I think it's one of the better
comments. Anything else?
No.
Okay, motion to adjourn.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right.
Thanks,
we are
Bill.
Adjourned at 8:31.
Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Bill.